Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for waiting, and welcome to the a.s.r. event call. At this moment, all participants are in listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. Now, I would like to hand over the conference to Mr. Michel Hülters. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning, everybody. This is Michel Hülters. Thank you for joining a.s.r.'s conference call on shadow accounting. I'm joined today with Patrick Kleinschmidt. At a.s.r., Patrick is responsible for GARC, and at a.s.r., that stands for Group Accounting, Reporting, and Control. As I'm sure you all know, that a.s.r. applies already for many years an accounting method called shadow accounting, and over the past few months, we've noticed that a varying degree of understanding of this method is around, and we thought it useful to set up this call to first explain the concept and its actual application by a.s.r., and then tackle any questions you may have on this topic. I'd like to highlight that this call is about the method itself. As such, we will not provide information on its magnitude in the second half of this year. And any disclosures on its contribution to earnings, we will present that with our full year numbers, which are due on the 22nd of February. Now, finally, before handing it over, we have sent you the presentation by email earlier today. The presentation and the slides will also become available on the website. Please note that in the presentation we have a disclaimer, and I need to recommend you to have a look at that. We've scheduled about an hour for this call, so up to 3 o'clock here in Europe. Continental Europe, I should say, but I believe this gives ample time for both presentation and answering all the questions you may have. Now, with that said, Patrick, the floor is yours.
Okay. Michel, thanks for the introduction, and thank you all for joining this conference call. A couple of weeks ago, Chris Tige asked me to host this call on the methodology of shadow accounting to help you gain a better understanding of the way we account for our insurance liabilities, and especially also the assets backing these liabilities, the matched assets. And it's not often that accounting methodologies attract the attention of many analysts, so I'm very happy to be able to talk to you about this subject, my favorite subject, or one of my favorite subjects. As Michel already told you, I will focus primarily on the methodology and will also, in the appendices, look at some historical figures, but I cannot comment on full year results or on possible future shadow accounting releases. And hopefully you've all been able to look at the slide deck, and I will talk you through the slides explaining the headlines of shadow accounting, and then at the end of the presentation, we will have room for Q&A. Moving to slide two. In slide two, the general concept of shadow accounting is introduced, and shadow accounting may have a somewhat negative connotation. It's actually a widely used and accepted methodology. So the negative connotation may be derived from the name, but it's not very much shadow or shady. It is a widely used and accepted methodology. It's not only used by a.s.r., but by other insurance companies in the Netherlands as well, but also by insurance companies in the U.S., for instance. With other insurance companies, shadow accounting practices are known under names like Fund for Future Appropriation and that type of names. What does make a.s.r. somewhat unique is the widespread use of shadow accounting. We use it for more or less all our life insurance liabilities and also a good chunk of our disability liabilities. And that's possible because a.s.r. already applied shadow accounting as its main accounting practice before the introduction of IFRS. And what shadow accounting does is that it resolves the valuation mismatch between the matched assets and liabilities. Assets are already accounted for at fair value. Liabilities are at what we call tariff rate, so the original rate guaranteed to the customer. And that leads to an accounting mismatch, and shadow accounting resolves that issue and more or less mimics a full fair value approach, so fair value on the asset side and also fair value on the liability side. And the shadow in shadow accounting, so the term shadow accounting, more or less indicates that the fair value changes in assets are shadowed, also change the valuation of the liabilities, and it moves like a shadow. So an increase in assets also leads to an increase in the liabilities, which these assets match. And if we turn to the messages on the slide, you'll see in the first bullet that shadow accounting is an allowed practice. It's one of the practices allowed under IFRS 4, especially because we already did it. You can see in the second bullet that it solves the valuation mismatch between the assets at fair value and the liabilities at tariff rates. And to avoid that fair value movements end up with the shareholder when they are actually needed to back the liabilities, liabilities are increased with a shadow accounting reserve. And that's what the third bullet is about. And it's also shown in the picture below that bullet where we see that if we would not have shadow accounting, there would be a mismatch between the assets backing insurance liabilities and the insurance liabilities themselves. And to resolve that mismatch, we also increase the insurance liabilities. So the increase of 25 at the insurance liabilities, which is depicted here in the picture, is actually the shadow accounting reserve. Shadow accounting is only applicable for fixed income investments, or actually bonds and fixed income derivatives. And these are the investments or the assets that are held to match the long-term cash flows of the insurance liabilities. So what is not in there is, or what does not qualify for shadow accounting, are investments in equity or real estate, because you do need a interest rate, you do need a duration to match cash flows. And that's why shadow accounting only applies to these fixed income instruments. And an important thing when IFRS 4 was introduced and many different methodologies were still allowed under IFRS 4 when it comes to the valuation of insurance liabilities, the ISB introduced an IFRS liability adequacy test, an IFRS LOC. And shadow accounting is a part of this liability adequacy test. And through this test, it is made sure that we account for our liabilities adequately. And should we not use shadow accounting and do not have the increase of 25, as we see in the picture, then there would be a deficit in the liability adequacy test, which we actually need to add on. So it's a method of solving that or preventing any issues to arise. Well, this is more or less a general concept, but if we look at the methodology itself, we turn to slide 3, and what you can see is that shadow accounting is a two-step approach. The first step is about the unrealized capital gains and losses, so unrealized value changes in the assets. The effect of interest rates moving up and down, it has nothing to do yet with sales or purchases. That's the next step. But this, the first step is about the unrealized value changes. And the graph we've put in this slide, there you can see the different approaches to assets that are against equity and assets that are against or that are backing the liabilities. If we look at assets against equity, the value changes in those assets go to the revaluation reserve. These are just the regular assets, assets not being matched in terms of cash flow to long-term insurance liabilities, but the regular assets ending up in the revaluation reserve. And this, by the way, does not only apply to the assets against equity, but also to against other liabilities, for instance, P&C liabilities. Then they also move to the revaluation reserve. It's a different story for the assets which are against the insurance liabilities and for which shadow accounting is applied. So the fixed income instruments against the long-term insurance liabilities. There the value change goes to the shadow accounting reserve. So this way we make sure that the value at the asset side and the value at the liability side are matched, and which is logical. The liabilities are at tariff rates. Tariff rates don't move. If interest rate moves, then the fair value of the future liabilities, they move, but we are not able under the tariff rate methodology to show that in the balance sheet. And by using the shadow accounting reserve, we are able to show the valuation change in the liabilities as well. And this is also more or less explained on the right side of the slide. So there's an explanation of how value changes move to the shadow accounting reserve. Please note the footnote here. We have skipped some accounting steps to make the presentation more accessible, and in real life some additional steps are needed. Value changes on derivatives, for instance, are first booked in the P&L simply because they are classified as held at fair value through P&L and are later taken out through the P&L and end up in shadow accounting. But this really doesn't move the final outcome, so we have not included this step in the examples. So there is some more technicality behind it, but at the end of the day, value changes in assets backing the insurance liabilities end up in the shadow accounting reserve. So that's the takeaway from slide 3. With shadow accounting, we more or less mimic fair value accounting for liabilities. And by the way, this part of the shadow accounting reserve, so the unrealized part, is not amortized nor realized in the P&L. It simply breathes with the fair value movements and is obviously as the interest rates have sharply decreased in the first 6 months of 2016, this part of the shadow accounting reserve really peaked at half year. And that's something that you can see in the appendix, and we'll come back to that later. But from this first step, shadow accounting reserve, nothing ends up in the P&L, at least not from this step. That's different for the second step we've shown in slide 4. Slide 4 is about shadow accounting on realized gains and losses. And we have a similar graph as in slide 3. And we start out with a revaluation reserve and a shadow accounting reserve. And for the assets, again, which are against equity, or at least not against the long-term insurance liabilities, we have a revaluation reserve. And if we sell an asset, then the cap gain or loss which results from that sale, it will impact the P&L and it will end up in the profit for the year. So it will hit the P&L at the moment of sale. If we look at the assets which are against the insurance liabilities, if we sell something there, then it moves from the shadow accounting reserves to the capital gains reserve without having any net impact on the P&L at that time. So we have a part of the insurance liabilities, now known as the capital gains reserve, in the balance sheet. And this capital gains reserve is, other than the shadow accounting reserve, this capital gains reserve is amortized and consequently recognized in the P&L. And this way, the original matching between cash flows of assets and liabilities is continued, and it really reflects the long-term nature of the match book. So where the matching exists before the sale of the assets, the matching remains after the sale of the assets. And we try to clarify this with the example, which is on slide 5 and 6. I will run you through that. It's a very simple example, but hopefully you get the idea of shadow accounting from this example. We start out with a liability of 100 with a tariff rate of 4%. And to match that perfectly, we also bought a bond of 100 with a coupon of 4%, 10 years duration. And obviously the annual return of that bond with 100 nominal and 4% interest is 4. And that's what we see as a starting point. Now in this example, interest rates drop. Drop from 4 to 3% instantly, and at that time there is a revaluation of the bond. The bond moves to about 108. I think it's a little bit higher if you count it exactly, but well, for argument's sake, it's 108. And then we have 108 in the bond value at the asset side, and we have 100 plus 8 in shadow accounting on the liability side. So keeping the stability or the balance in the balance sheet. And the second step we've described here is that we, for one reason or the other, decide to sell this bond. And as market rates have dropped to 3%, the value of the bond at that time is 108. If we sell the bond, then we make a capital gain of 8. But we do not recognize the capital gain at that moment, but we add that to the capital gains reserve. So at that time, at the time of sale for these assets backing the insurance liabilities, the net P&L impact is zero. But after we sold the bonds, then we only have cash on the balance sheet, and cash is not a good thing to match our liabilities with. So we intend to buy a new bond, and we actually find a new bond with a 4% interest rate and decide to buy that. But since interest rates have dropped to 3%, a 4% coupon bond would be priced at a higher level, would be priced, of course, at 108. So we buy the bond at 108, and what we then end up with, and that's in the impact on the P&L, we still have a coupon of 4 because we bought it at 108, but the nominal was 100, 4% interest, so we get 4%. Since we bought it at 108, it's 8 above par, so after 10 years, we get 100 back, so the 8 we need to amortize. Line item B is the amortization from market value to nominal, which will cost us 0.8 on an annual basis. But the good thing is here that we have the capital gains reserve, and the capital gains reserve will amortize over the remaining lifetime of the bond we have sold, and that remaining lifetime, well, it's the same as the bond we bought back, so we get 0.8 on an annual basis. And the total investment return didn't move from the original bond. So in this way, shadow accounting, and by adding the original cap gain to the capital gains reserve, releasing the capital gains reserve over time, we are able to fund the negative P&L that is derived from the amortization from market value to nominal, and we end up with a return on 4, which was exactly what we needed because we had a matched book. But not in all cases you can buy the same bond, of course. So on slide 6, there's a bit of a different example where we do not buy or do not reinvest in a bond with a coupon of 4%, but in this case we have bought a bond with a coupon of 3%, so the market rates. In the example on page 6, step 1 and step 2 are exactly the same. The differences are in 3A and 4A. What we do in 3A, we do not buy a bond with a coupon of 4%, we do buy a bond with a coupon of 3%, and we buy it at par because 3% is at that time the market rate. So we buy 108 of the bond at 3%. If we look at the P&L impact, the coupon is then not 4 anymore, but it's 108 times 3%, which is about 3.2. But we do not need to amortize market value back to nominal, because after 10 years we will get 108 back, because that's the nominal we bought. So the line item B will move to 0, and we still get the amortization from the capital gains reserve, which is 0.8, and the total investment return will still be 4.0, which again is the amount that we needed from the matched book. Well, in this slide, we were one of you noticed that we made a copy-paste mistake. So, and we will adjust that when we put this slide on the web. But under 4A, it says the coupon of 3% on a nominal amount of 100, and obviously that needs to be a nominal amount of 108. So, thanks to Mr. Murray for noticing this mistake. But the basic idea here is that through shadow accounting, we will keep the match as it should be. So wrapping up, before talking a little bit about the appendices, but wrapping up the methodology, what you see is that under IFRS 4, various approaches to account for insurance liabilities are allowed. IFRS 4 didn't really present a new way of reporting insurance liabilities. Everything which you already did was still allowed. However, the ISB introduced the IFRS LAT, the IFRS LAT, to be able to make sure that all insurance companies would have an adequate accounting for their insurance liabilities. And in our case, a shadow accounting reserve are part of the insurance liabilities and are tested in the IFRS LAT. Shadow accounting has also been a part of ASR's accounting methods and policies for many years, even prior to the inception of IFRS. It really is deeply embedded in the financial policies and performance. It's not something you can easily take out. It's also not something that you can easily add on. It's just a proven and stable system which helps us to mimic a fair value balance sheet. So the shadow accounting is applicable only for the assets which are held to match the long-term cash flows. That's in life, but also part of the disability business, but obviously as life is a much, much bigger a liability. Most of the shadow accounting is about the life segment and only part of the disability business. But it's also applicable to the disability business because it's similar to life. It has a relatively long duration of liabilities. The principle of shadow accounting is to ensure that insurance liabilities are adequate, but also to ensure that the cap gains or losses are not incorrectly allocated to shareholders. If we make a capital gain because the interest rates are decreased, that doesn't mean that we do not need that income to back the insurance liabilities. And if we would already recognize that in the P&L, we would have a shortage in the liabilities. So that is what shadow accounting solves. And it solves the mismatch between fair value on the one side, on the asset side, and the tariff rates accounting on the liability side by adding a shadow accounting reserve. And what is really nice about the shadow accounting methodology is that it helps us to amortize the realized gains and losses over the original lifetime of the asset sold. In the original lifetime of the asset sold, and it was part of the matching of the book with the insurance book with the assets. So as we are able to amortize those realized gains and losses, we would keep the matching as it is. So even if we do some trades in the book for investment management purposes, it doesn't affect the matching of the assets with the liabilities. And that really renders us a very stable earnings pattern. And actually, we are very happy and comfortable with the fact that we have this ability of mimicking that fair value approach through shadow accounting. We're very lucky to have that. We are very lucky that we already did that before the introduction of IFRS. But then finally, a short comment on the appendices. Appendices are what they are, appendices, so I will not go into them in detail, but give you a little bit of guidance. The first slide of the appendix shows the reported P&L and where it is affected by shadow accounting. And the line items affected, they contain many other movements besides those related to shadow accounting. So for instance, in the fair value gains and losses, they also include movements in the real estate portfolio. And also, as I already explained in slide 3, much of the shadow accounting does not even run through the P&L. So this overview, the the presentation in the P&L gives a relatively limited view of what happens within shadow accounting. And a better overview in a very simple overview is on slide 10, final slide of the appendix. And there you can see the unrealized part of the shadow accounting reserve, the realized part of the shadow accounting reserve, and the amortization. Unrealized part being driven very much by the interest rate movements. Realized part being affected by either amortization going out and realized capital gains and losses from sales going in. And well, you can see the amortization, you can see the movement of the capital gains reserve, so you can also probably calculate what we added to the capital gains reserve in the first half of 2016. So that is a bit of an insight in the figures. Now I think handing back to Michel for Q&A.
Sure. Operator, we're ready for the Q&A, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, the question and answer session will start now. To indicate you have a question, please press star 1. I repeat, star 1 for questions or remarks. Please go ahead. First question is from Mr. Ashik Musadi from JP Morgan. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon, Patrick, and good afternoon, Michelle. And thanks a lot for doing this. It's a really helpful session on shadow accounting. Now, I have one question. I got a bit confused at first half results on the same topic. So just to give you a bit of background, so at your first half results, your life earnings went up by 51 million, which is 25% growth year on year. Out of which it was clearly mentioned that 22 million is from acquisition. So net-net, your earnings in life still went up 30 million, which is kind of 15% year-on-year growth. Now, if I look at your slides number 5 and 6, what I see here is T1, T2, T3, everything is still 444 because of your shadow accounting. So if that's the case, how come your earnings went up by 30 million, which is 15% growth year on year? So that's what I'm trying to understand is, because of shadow accounting, if you're perfectly matched and you're following that and without any acceleration or deceleration of shadow accounting, why should your earnings go up in life business? Thank you.
Thank you, Ashik, for the question. And yeah, I can imagine that you have that question. Because there was something which was more particular that happened moving those that result up. A couple of years ago, we decided to sell a relatively sizable portfolio of swaptions because of interest rate matching considerations. And those swaptions, they weren't kicked in yet, so there was a future moment that they were kicked in, but they were shadow accounted. So what you see happening, and which is one of the most important reasons for the 30 million to be added, is that we now start amortizing the cap gain of the swaptions, which was realized a couple of years ago. The first 2 or 3 years, we didn't get any capital release from the capital gain reserve because of those swaptions, simply because if we would have kept those swaptions, they wouldn't have kicked in yet. But now they would have, and so the realized cap gains are now amortized into the P&L.
So it's basically that shadow accounting on swaption which hadn't kicked in. So does that mean that there won't be any further jumps like that going forward because of this shadow accounting? And do you have any other such swaptions that may kick in over the next 1 or 2 years? Because ultimately what I'm trying to understand here is if you have a back book, whatever happens to market, your back book earnings should not move up or down based on shadow accounting if your duration matched. If my understanding is right, then a sudden pickup like that is a bit confusing, is the only thing I'm after, basically.
Perfectly clear. It's one of the things I was told not to do is to give an indication on a future earnings movement. But what I can say is that the sale in the past of this swaption book was a relatively unique event. I do not expect similar things to be in the portfolio. It is a book which, of course, doesn't run off in 1 year, so it will add for a couple of years. But it was a one-time event, more or less, leading to a add-on for the remaining period of whatever those swaptions were. But other than that, I fully agree with your analysis. Actually, shadow accounting is put in place not to move the needle. So I agree with your analysis, and this was a special item, which I'm not sure if it's skill or luck, but we sold them at the right time.
No, that's fine. I mean, sorry, I'm asking too many questions. Maybe this one, then I'll stop. So is this one-off jump going to stay here for next 15 years or 20 years, whatever the duration of your book is? Or was it a short-term thing, like it goes up and disappears over 2-3 years? Because derivatives are typically short-dated instruments. So just this last question, and I'll shut down. Thank you.
Okay, well, no need to shut down. These are all very good and valid questions. The only issue is I cannot really comment on the remaining lifetime, of course, of this pickup. But it will run out over the time that the original swaptions were, and usually swaptions are not there for 1 or 2 years, as you will understand. And actually, if we are smart or lucky enough to do this in the future, we will, of course, would never step away from an additional pickup. But for now, I don't believe it will it will move away quickly, but it will run off over the remaining lifespan of those swaptions. And unfortunately, I cannot help you in determining how long that will be exactly, but it will not be 1 or 2 years.
That's very clear. Thanks a lot. And you're very kind to do this explanation. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, for any further questions, you can still press star 1. Star 1 for any further questions or remarks. Again, a question from Mr. Farquhar Murray from Autonomous. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi, afternoon, gentlemen, and thanks again for this call. It's actually extremely helpful indeed. Just one question from my side, really just regarding how you hypothecate assets to being backing liabilities or obviously backing shareholders' funds. What's the kind of rule around that? For instance, I mean, does it basically all the equity and real estate end up being against shareholders' funds? How does the hypothecation exactly work?
Thank you for your question, and also thank you for noticing the mistake in our presentation. The allocation works exactly as you mentioned it. Basically, equity and real estate are against shareholders' funds. The liabilities are backed by fixed income investments, so bonds, but also to manage our interest rate risk derivatives. Also, some mortgages are against the insurance liabilities, but mortgages other than bonds are not accounted for at fair value, so shadow accounting doesn't play a role for mortgages either. So it's really the bonds which are against the insurance liabilities.
Okay. Thanks for your need.
Ladies and gentlemen, for any further questions, still star 1. Star 1 for any further questions or remarks.
Okay.
There are no further questions coming through.
Yeah, it seems that there are no further questions. And thank you all for participating in this call. If there are any questions at a later stage, please do not hesitate to contact the investor relations team at ASR. Thank you all and talk to you soon after the full year results. Thank you.
This concludes the ASR conference call. Thank you for attending. You can disconnect your line now. Have a nice day. Thank you.